All right, hi everybody, and welcome to Lecture 21 in this ancient history program of History at Our House for the elementary class. We are resuming where we left off before our Columbus Day break. And so we're going to talk today about pharaonic society. Pharaonic, or I don't even know if I'm pharaonic. I'm not even sure how to pronounce it, but I pronounce it pharaonic. Pharaonic society means the word pharaonic is like an adjective form of the word pharaoh. Right? So we take the word America and we make the adjective American, and we take the word pharaoh and we make the adjective pharaonic. Okay, so in other words, the society that revolved around the pharaohs. Today we're going to talk about the challenges of that and how a life in Egypt changed. We know that, let's go right back to our beginnings here. We know that life in Egypt, in all of Egyptian history, in a sense, revolved around the pharaohs, right? This is a work of art that shows us the pharaoh in the center, the pharaoh as the most important character in Egyptian society, right? So, and we know that the pharaohs were able to command the labor of tens of thousands, perhaps 100,000 people at a time, over the course of many years, to build pyramids, which were these giant monument tombs. So this is, we look back to this archaic past and we see this society that has these pyramids leaping out of the sand, and we wonder what life was like back then. And thanks to the deciphering of the Rosetta Stone, we can read the Narmer palette and other things, and we can learn about Menes Narmer, we can learn about the Egyptians, we can learn about the fact that these pharaohs could get these pyramids built and what they were for. And so now what we want to understand more closely is, how did life work in a place like that? We've already talked about, okay, The daily life of people was very different, of course, than the life of the pharaohs, right? The daily life of the people was really much more centered around something else. Not really a person, but a thing. What was life centered on in ancient Egypt? Especially for, you know, daily life. Gotta resume the old... What was life centered on? Julia?
Gods?
No, I wouldn't say that. I mean, it was how they interpreted what life was centered on. Rosetta?
Pharaoh?
No, I already set the pharaoh aside. So let's see who else can get this one. Let's see here. We got to bring this back up. I don't have all of my visuals in perfect shape today. All right, here we are. Here's a good hint. What did life really center on? Opal?
Water.
Yeah, good answer, right? And in particular, as Herodotus said, Egypt is the gift of the Nile. Let's just fill in our specific geography here, Opal. What was the water that everybody relied on?
The Nile,
yeah, okay, right? So this is a Nile-centered civilization. Everything about life in Egypt depended on the Nile. Even, we learned a little bit, that even the pharaohs depended in a very important way on the Nile, right? So the pharaohs, we know, people believed in some way or some degree that they were connected to the gods, or perhaps were gods themselves in some sense. Okay. But even the pharaohs knew that life centers around the Nile. And what did we learn last time before our break here about how, well, the pharaohs had to respect the Nile. Even all the powerful rulers had to know what was happening with the Nile. What was the device that teaches us that the pharaohs understood that it was really the Nile that life in Egypt relied on, not them so much? What was that device called that they used to check up on the Nile? Bringing back that context here. Sigourney?
Nilometer.
The Nilometer, right. The rulers of Egypt needed to measure the Nile. Do you guys remember why? Why did they need to measure it? Every year it would flood. Why was it important to measure? Opal?
Because you needed to change the amount you took from the people depending on if it was too low, too high, or just right.
Okay, good, right? If the Nile flood was just right, then the people would be able to make a certain amount of food, and you would be able to tax them to a certain level. If there was too much flooding, then their homes might be ruined, and you wouldn't want to take too much from them, because they just didn't have any. And if the flood was too low, then the crops would also be weak, and you as the Pharaoh would not want to take too much from them, because, well, what happens to rulers who take too much from their people throughout history? And let me remind you of a anchor fact of history, namely 1776. What happens to rulers who take too much from their people? Henry, Wyatt?
They get deposed.
Yeah, good one. Okay, the people rebel, as in 1776, the American Revolution. The King of England, George III, wanted to have absolute power over the colonies. Before he could even take things from them, the Founding Fathers were so smart, they realized where things were headed, and they said, we're not even going to let things go in that direction. We're going to make a free country here. So, yeah, now, the Egyptians didn't have that same understanding of life. But, throughout history, wherever you look, it doesn't matter where, when the rulers are tyrants, when the rulers take too much from the people, they rise up, they rebel. And we're going to see that in Egyptian history. We're going to see that very shortly here. As it turns out, we won't quite get there until early next week because we have this short week here. But we're gonna set things up for the failure of the pharaohs, which happened more than once. So we have a society in which the pharaoh is the most important character by far, but he is going to fail. Whoever's in charge is not going to be able to continue to be the pharaoh. So, understanding what a pharaoh was and how life worked in a place where there were pharaohs is crucial to understanding the story of Egypt. Okay, so let's get to this tricky part here. So, Julia brought up a good point that we're going to connect up in our story here, right? That Julia said, well, life in Egypt had to do with the belief of the people in a variety of gods. And when we're talking about the pharaohs and their importance in Egypt, we're talking about Egyptian religion in part, okay? And so you saw a similar picture to this one at one point, right? I showed you this fascinating creature here that's a human kind of a form, but it has a falcon head and then a serpent that is the sun, in fact. And this is Ra, the god of the sun. And in Egyptian society, there was a belief that the pharaohs were the descendants of Ra. And so this was part of their godly quality. You can read up if you are interested in the details, concerning Egyptian religion, which changed quite a bit over time. Certainly nobody believes it in anymore. So it's not something that we are particularly interested in because it's extinct. But, But back then, there was this belief that the pharaohs were related to the sun god Ra, and thus were kind of gods in some sense, or perhaps some people really did believe that. But what we're going to talk about today is the reality of the pharaoh's life in the challenges of being a ruler. Okay? Opal, put your hand down unless you have a question, follow up. Okay? So, let's talk about the reality of life as a pharaoh. You are the ruler. If you are not Menes Narmer, let's answer this question just to get us started. If you're Menes Narmer, how did you become the pharaoh? We know that from the Narmer palette. How did you become the pharaoh? Patrick, how did Menes Narmer become the pharaoh? You're not quite fully awake there, buddy. Come on, you know the anchor fact. Let's get moving here. What's the anchor
unified
fact?
Unified.
Yeah, unified. But that means what? Was he nice?
No.
What do we see on the Narmer palette? Do we see a nice guy? What are all of these things?
Slaves.
No, their bodies with their heads cut off. Who did that?
Menes Narmer.
Yeah, the Menes Narmer. So how did he unify Egypt? Is he being nice to this guy on this side of the palette?
No.
No? What's he going to do?
He's going to kill him.
Yeah, right. He's going to kill him with a club, okay? So Menes Narmer got to be the pharaoh by beating up, presumably, this guy over here, killing him, probably, the king of Lower Egypt, right? Becoming the ruler. Okay, so how did other people then, after Menes Narmer, become the pharaoh? Who has any notion of that? Okay, he became the pharaoh, the first pharaoh, by conquest. What about after that? How did people become the pharaoh of Egypt? Opal?
His children.
His children, okay.
Descendants.
Okay, right, his descendants. Okay, what do we call that? What is the word for this family line of rulers over time? The king has a son. Usually it's the son, but sometimes we see rulers who are females. And that ruler, he becomes the ruler, and then he has children, and presumably his eldest son becomes the next ruler, and so on and so forth. What's the important historical vocabulary word for that line of succession, that line of people all belonging to the same family, and each one becomes the next ruler after the one before? Henry, Wyatt? Excellent. That is a dynasty. Okay, so in Egypt, as elsewhere, the pharaoh's son would become the ruler. Okay, in order to have a son, what does a pharaoh have to have? Rosetta?
A wife,
right? Okay. So he is a man and she's a woman and they're going to have children. All of this is very normal and natural, isn't it? Okay, now, well, let's just think that through just a little bit. Okay, what are children like? What's life like? Family life like? I'm going to ask it as a leading question. Is real family life for children and all of the things that happen, is that godlike? Is that a part of the whole idea of being a god in a society? Who can think of something that has to do with real life? You're a pharaoh. You've got a wife. You have children, right? Who can think of something that's just real and human and not at all godlike about that? A part of real life. Opal?
Changing diapers.
Awesome answer. Changing diapers. Exactly. So wait a minute. You're going to tell me that the next God King has stinky diapers? What? Wait, that's human. That's normal. What else does the next God King do while he's still a child? What else does he do? Julia?
He sleeps.
He sleeps, okay. That's a pretty standard, you know, human thing. What else, Rosetta?
He plays.
He plays, okay. What else does he do that's less, let's say, less godlike, less pleasant, right? More along those lines of things that human beings do that, you know, it's just not that fun. And it's just not very godlike at all, right? What would be an example other than the stinky diapers? Opal?
Going to the bathroom?
Well, yeah, okay, all of that stuff. Okay, I was also thinking about how he would cry. Well, you know, babies cry, right? And kids will, when they're learning how to walk, they'll fall and they'll bang their knees and they'll fall on the floor and they'll hit their heads and they will weep and they will, what else do kids do that, you know, is not godlike? And grown-ups, it happens to grown-ups too, right? What else could we expect would happen in real life? I'll explain to you why we're going in this direction here. What else, Opal?
Oh, I'm sorry. My hand was hurt.
What else would happen? Sometimes people in History at Our House miss class. Why? Because they are... You know, sometimes you can't go to school. Why? Because you are... Opal?
Sick,
right? So, especially if you're living along the Nile and there's lots of mosquitoes, well, maybe you're going to get a fever. Right? Mosquitoes transmit lots of horrible diseases. This is a pre-scientific, pre-industrial time. You can't do anything about it. In fact, what do real people do that's very ungodlike? And that would be, well, very inconvenient if you are the Pharaoh and let's say you only have one son. What would be the most inconvenient thing that child could do for you as the Pharaoh? That would be very ungodlike, Julia.
Die.
Right? I mean, it happens. People die. We are mortal, right? So, and especially, again, in pre-industrial times, children often died. Very sad. Truth. Okay? But people tended to try to have a lot more children because they knew that some of them would die. It's a regular fact of life. All right, so why am I kind of spending so much time on this reality of this humanity of the pharaohs? Right, because they are supposed to be gods. There's supposed to be kind of a godlike quality to them. How can they really have that if they're human? Right, they are people, and so they're going to have real lives. And they're going to have real human problems. And within families, you know, how are the kids of the Pharaoh going to treat each other? It's all going to be great, isn't it? How are the siblings in the royal household going to treat each other? In a godlike manner? In what manner? Real question again. Who has siblings here? I know two guys that have siblings. What's the reality going to be, Henry Wyatt?
This is Wyatt.
Yes.
They're going to fight.
Yeah, sometimes they're not going to get along, right? That's very human, right? And so, yeah, we have all of these really human things. Okay, but the Pharaoh has got to be a God King. He has to be able to get 100,000 people to build a pyramid for him. Oh my goodness, so, but how does that happen? Well, the thing is, because the Pharaohs were human, right? Because the Pharaohs were people, but... they had to maintain this image as gods. How would you do that? How could you pull that off? How could you do that? Don't put your hand still up, but I think it's a mistake. How would you do that? You are human, but you need everybody else to think you're a god. How could you do it? Would everybody be allowed to know about the stinky diapers? Would everybody be allowed to know about your food allergies? Would everybody be allowed to know about the fever that you got? Would everybody be allowed to know about what? All the problems. All the different things that are going on in your life and the challenges and so on. Would that work? Could everybody know these things about the Pharaoh? Kind of a one-word answer, but Rosetta, maybe you can take it somewhere. Rosetta, go ahead.
No, and maybe he just has to sort of, I guess, hide. It, not like hide, but hide, like make it a secret.
Okay, excellent answer. In order to be a god king, the Pharaoh had to be separate from the people. Okay, absolutely. The Pharaoh had to be, and his family had to be in the palace. They had to be separate from everybody else and only occasionally go out in a really big parade on some kind of giant chariot, and everybody would look at how amazing the Pharaoh is, but definitely, you wouldn't want to go on the parade without having a good meal ahead of time. And, you know, you wouldn't want to be sick that day. And everything would have to kind of go, you know, be very, very carefully organized. So that when you interact with the people, it reinforces the idea. It makes them believe in your godhood. Like, this would be life in a society like that. And so here's what we want to focus on today. Somebody's got to do that. Rosetta is exactly right, that the pharaohs had to be separate from everybody else. Somebody has got to manage all of that real life stuff. Because real life is real. You can't make magical spells and the crops will grow. And you can't pretend these problems of real life away. You've got to measure the Nile so that you really know. And so somebody's got to handle the practical challenges of having a kingdom. Right? Because the Pharaoh is the king, but a special kind of kingdom. Because the Pharaoh is also a god. He's got to be kept separate from everybody else. So in the pharaonic society, there was somebody that was in charge of this task. I'm going to go ahead and type his title in the chat box, which is kind of the best place for it to be. Various forms of spelling for it. You might see it spelled in different ways. One of these two types of spellings. And you'll probably hear it pronounced different ways as well. So you'll just have to try to be comfortable with encountering it in different ways. I pronounce it vizier. You might hear somebody here say visor. You might hear say, you know, different people say it in different ways. But there was a person who was in charge of the real job of running Egypt, so that the Pharaoh didn't have to take care of it personally. Because you wouldn't want the Pharaoh having to take care of that. He's not supposed to worry about things like that. He's supposed to be a god. So you have somebody named the vizier. That's his title. Okay, and he's supposed to get the real work done. Okay, so who can tell me what's good about this, what's bad about this? or let's say, what might be the advantages of this? What would be the disadvantages of such an arrangement? Okay, let's see. Henry and Wyatt.
This is Wyatt. That someone would know and he could spread the word about it, and then that would be almost like end of your dynasty.
So, wait a minute. The vizier would what? What do you... say that again.
The vizier could spread word about what's going... what the pharaoh actually is, and that would be a very probable end of your dynasty.
Okay, so the vizier would have direct contact with the pharaoh. The vizier would know, certainly, of the humanity of the pharaoh, right? He's directly in contact with the pharaoh, and he is the one who's really in charge of the government. So he's gonna know. All right, so there's a danger there, because if the vizier knows, then, well, how is he going to feel about the pharaoh and the whole idea of the pharaoh being in charge of Egypt? Well, we don't know what he's going to do, but we can, you know, because viziers are each individual people, and, you know, we have a lot of different ones in history, and they did act differently. But let me give you kind of a possibility here. The vizier, Henry or Wyatt suggests that there might be a danger, because the vizier would know that the pharaoh is not a god, and that he's a regular person, that the family of the pharaoh are regular people, they have regular problems, and all of that kind of stuff. Okay. And so he would know. But what does that give the vizier, then, if he really knows the pharaoh, and he is the one who is in charge of the government? What does he have? What does this give him to be in this position? Wyatt gave us an example of something that he could do, right? He could ruin the reputation of the pharaoh, perhaps, in some way or another. Rosetta, what do you think?
He has a lot of power.
He has power. He has real power because he knows the truth. And what else does he do? He is the one who gives the orders to everybody else. The pharaoh doesn't do that. You don't want the pharaoh in charge of all of the day-to-day challenges of the government. He's not supposed to have to do that. He's supposed to be a god separate from everybody else. Okay? So, the vizier is the one who has the real power. So, we can get into some really difficult situations. So what the worst situation would be if you have a pharaoh who is weak, and then you have a vizier who is power hungry. Rosetta?
He could overthrow the pharaoh.
All right. Rosetta's onto this here, and I think Wyatt had this figured out as well, right? So the reality of life as a pharaoh is that you have to be separate from the people. This separation, is it an advantage or a disadvantage? Well, actually, it's both, but that's why it's tricky, because the advantage is the people can't see you. The advantage is you get to maintain this godlike image and rule over them and so on. But the disadvantage is you have to rely on other people. And if they don't want to help you or support you, then they might want to overthrow you. They might want to take over for themselves. So we're going to see when this would happen, right? The reality of life as a pharaoh is that you are actually, in a way, in a pretty dangerous position. And the life of the pharaohs was not necessarily a very happy one in many regards. You had to worry about the vizier. And as we'll talk about next time, you had to worry about other people as well. All right. Okay, well, we're not going to get much of a rhythm going here because we have this short week. But we will come back to this. And we'll talk about, on Monday, we'll talk about the first time in which Egyptian society fell apart. What was that like? When the age of the pyramids came to an end, when the pharaohs couldn't build pyramids anymore, and when a society with the pharaoh in charge stopped working for quite a while, and how hard it was to put the pieces back together again. And as it turns out, they were able to do that. And then things went on for a while, and Egypt survived that challenge and so on. And then, well, then it happened again. And then somebody put the pieces back together. And then it happened again. And so this life in Egypt had a kind of a pattern where you would get the pharaoh, a powerful pharaoh who would take over. And then his descendants would rule for a certain amount of time. And then eventually it would fall apart. And then eventually another strong pharaoh would come and put things back together again. And then his descendants would rule for a while. And then eventually it would fall apart again. And then it would happen over and over. And so we'll see. We'll see how this kind of, how this works. And eventually what we'll find is that, well, Egypt is going to, that might work, and it turns out it did work for like 3,000 years for a society that's kind of by itself. And we know that Egypt is quite a lot by itself, right? Because we have, where's our, right? This is Egypt, and it is isolated and by itself, but not completely. And eventually, it's going to come into contact with its neighbors, and it's going to have other problems to deal with beyond the problems just of having a pharaoh. And eventually Egypt just couldn't handle it. It's going to fall apart, and we are going to meet the civilization that took over. All right, that'll be it for now. Tomorrow, of course, we return to our painting. It'll be interesting to compare what we see in the painting to this idea that we have of a pharaoh. And we don't necessarily know if the character we have in our painting is a pharaoh, but it might be interesting to think about these things that we have discussed today, the challenges of having a ruler and being separate from the people and all that kind of stuff. And we'll look at the painting and see if we can see parts of that challenge in the painting. All right, so tomorrow is History Through Art. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you tomorrow.
Bye, Mr. Powell.
Bye-bye.